Let's make today the day you get one step closer to becoming the parent you've always wanted to be and the parent your children deserve. Hi, and welcome to Powerful Parenting for Today's Kids. I am your host, Erin Taylor, and I have wanted to help parents and children literally since I was 11 years old. I created this podcast to help you make a stronger, healthier, deeper connection to your child, to understand the inevitable challenges a little better, and learn some new ways to navigate them when they occur. Thank you for spending some time with me. Now let's get this show started. Hello and welcome back to the show. Today is episode number 638, and I'm excited to chat with my new friend, Brad Baldridge. Brad is a college funding specialist who has helped thousands of families plan and save for college with smart and proven strategies to save time, money, and stress. He teaches parents the best ways to save and pay for college, including how to find the right school, maximize financial aid and scholarships, avoid student loan debt, and make your children's college dreams come true without wiping out your finances or retirement. Brad, welcome to the show. I'm really excited to have this conversation with you.
Yeah, it's great to be here.
And you also, before we go any further, you also have a podcast. Can you tell my listeners a little bit about it?
Sure. The podcast is called Taming the High Cost of College. And it's a weekly podcast where we talk about all things college related. So if you've got a high school student and you're working on college or thinking about working on college, we cover things like need-based aid and financial aid and how to figure out what you want to be when you grow up. And I've got guests that come from, you know, various consultants and that type of thing that are involved in college planning with the students and test prep and that type of thing, and the new technologies that are coming out around college and that type of thing. Authors, those types of people are guests. But again, as I think you mentioned in your podcast, that, you know, it's a great way for parents to learn while they're doing something else. So while you're exercising or driving, you know, getting a head start on what college is going to look like if you've got a freshman, sophomore, junior. And certainly if you have a senior and you're in panic mode, you can get information as well.
That's awesome. I am going to have to check it out because, as I told you before we started recording, I have three teenagers, one of whom is a sophomore in college, one is a junior, and one is a freshman. So I am knee deep in all of it right now. So I can't wait to hear what you have to say.
Yes. Well, great.
So what do you think is the very biggest, most important thing you could say to parents who have kids, whether they're just born or seniors in college or high school?
Right. Well, a couple of important things to realize. One is the college game has changed. Mm-hmm. So a typical parent that went to college 20 or 30 or 40 years ago, it's a lot different today than what it was back then. You know, I remember working hard in a summer job and earning enough that with that and a small loan, I could cover a state school and actually paid for most of college on my own. Wow. I did run out of money typically in March, April. You know, my parents would send me $100 because I was, you know, starving or whatever. But in general, you know, you could kind of make it on your own. Today, that's nearly impossible for a typical family to be able to have a student just work hard and cover college. It just, you know, we're talking $20,000, $30,000, $40,000 a year. And most students can't raise that kind of money. And again, we've all heard the cost of college is going up faster than inflation. And that's been true up until recently. And again, because college has gotten so much more expensive, it's a bigger deal in that it has a bigger impact on the family budget. It's a lot harder for students to cover it on their own. So they're much more reliant on parents to help in some way. So I think that's And then again, the, you know, things like need-based aid and merit aid and the whole process is more complicated. And you need to spend more time at it because, again, because it's such a big part of the budget. And it can have a pretty big financial impact on most families.
Yes. I remember when I want to talk a little bit about junior year for a moment. Everybody I knew told me when my son was in high school, oh, junior year, it's horrible. It's the hardest year, this and that and the other. And I thought, well, whatever. It's probably not that bad. And my son was the kind of kid who was able to get his work done very efficiently, quickly. He never was strapped down with homework day after day after day, maybe for a project here or there, but pretty much he was not overburdened with homework. He got it done in the prep time that they had in school and things like that. Mm-hmm. So I kind of thought, oh, he's the kind of kid, he'll just kind of breeze through it. It's not going to be a big deal. I was just shell-shocked at how stressful that year was for him. And he's not a high stress kind of a kid. And even for him, it was so much. Goodness gracious, between the SATs and the school visits, and he wanted to play a sport in college. So connecting with coaches and, oh my gosh. And then the academics are kind of heavy in that junior year. It's a lot. It's a lot for our kids.
Absolutely. I think one of the, you know, what happens is that a lot of times the course load jumps up because all of a sudden APs are a reality. Mm-hmm. So a lot of students are now saying, well, I've got to start taking my AP physics and chemistry and literature and all that kind of stuff. And for many students, that's a step up in their coursework as far as, you know, they expect you to do homework every time, you know, every day, or not everything is covered in class. You actually have to read some books and learn some of the concepts on your own, type of thing. Mm-hmm. And the college process starts and the SATs. And so it does become a lot. And for parents, it's very similar. Again, with college planning, there's things, certain things that parents kind of are in charge of. There's things that the student is in charge of, and the parents need to understand that, you know, you can start figuring out what kind of aid, and are we saving enough, or have we saved enough, or what is this really going to cost, and how do we keep it affordable? Or what can we afford? What's our budget? You know, you mentioned you have three kids. Well, that, you know, you take everything and multiply it by three, and all of a sudden it gets even more complicated.
Yes.
Whereas, again, I've seen some only children where it's not quite as bad because, yes, it's expensive, but it's only once.
Right. I feel like this time around with my daughter, who's a junior now, I feel a little more equipped, and I felt a little more prepared when she was entering junior year to kind of prep her for what was coming. And she just finished taking her SATs about 10 days ago as of this recording. And so we haven't gotten the scores yet back or anything, but she took them. So I feel like that's in a good time frame. And I said, and she was worried about it. And she said, oh my gosh, what, how am I going to do? And should I retake it? And should I not? What should I do? And I said, my advice to you is to wait and see. First of all, do your best. Don't stress over it. Just do your best. If you don't like your score, you always can take it over again. If you like your score, you don't have to take it again. You can look at the schools you're interested in and see what their SAT scores look like of their incoming freshmen. And if you fall within that range and you're comfortable, you don't have to take it again. And if you want to take it again, great. But I'm just trying to like take that pressure off of her so that she can just kind of do it and not be so stressed about it.
Absolutely. Yeah. And I think that's a part of the process is you do your testing and you do your school visits and your school research and you figure out what matches up. Mm-hmm. I mean, there are situations where you have a choice. Either you change your school list or you change your test scores.
Because
right now it doesn't match. Now to make it even more complicated with COVID, a lot of colleges now are test optional.
Right.
Which means you may not have to submit tests. So now you have to look at, you know, maybe it's your GPA or other factors. So the jury's still out on what test optional really means.
Or how long it will last, right?
And how long it will last, right? Some colleges are already backing away from it and starting to require testing again.
Mm-hmm.
The test optional movement actually started well before COVID. Mm-hmm. COVID just forced everybody to give it a shot because they, you know, they had no choice because mm-hmm. half the students, you know, the worst year, I think that had been 2020, that batch of students was essentially unable to take a test.
Mm-hmm.
So they had no choice but to accept students without tests because otherwise they'd, you know, they would lost so many students, they would not have been a viable institution anymore.
Right.
So they had to, but, and so some of them don't have to anymore. So they're going back to it. But again, many schools were test optional and decided tests weren't important to them before COVID and they continued. Some are jumping on that bandwagon now of, you know, testing is, you know, the high pressure and do we really need it? And is it, so some colleges again are differentiating by saying, we don't care about tests. Or some of them will say, well, look at the test scores if you want to submit them, but if you don't, we'll evaluate you without them.
Mm-hmm.
A new layer of complexity where is the schools you're interested in going to be test optional by the time you get there?
Right.
And maybe I'm better off, especially if you think you can put up a score that's better, right? I mean, there's some people that say, well, I'm proud of my test scores, not so much my grades. Well, then you want to be submitting test scores where you can.
Right.
Others are, you know, kids, some kids are test takers, some aren't. And some kids can prep well and some can't, et cetera, et cetera. So, again, another thing to think through of, do I need to work hard and get the scores I need, or am I going to go test optional, or how am I going to make this work?
Yeah, I can say for my two kids who are in and getting into this process, they're both very, very different. My son is an exceptional test taker, so the SAT was a breeze for him, but he's not a super hard worker in school, so his grades weren't super, super high. They weren't low, but they weren't way, way up there.
Right.
And my daughter is a decent test taker, but she's not like he is, but she is a super hard worker, takes all the hard classes and has really good grades. So they are night and day with how, you know, what their strengths and weaknesses are. And so it'll be, I'm finding it interesting to go through this process with her to see what it looks, what it's going to look like on the back end when she gets to the application process and what kind of aid schools might be willing to offer her. What right. I did find interesting with my son, because he wanted to play volleyball in college, that really took the thousands and thousands of schools in the US and really kind of chopped about 90% of them away, because there aren't a ton of schools who have a men's volleyball program.
Right.
And so that really made the list. It was easy to chop down so many schools just right away. And right. then of the ones that were left and the ones he chose to apply to, the school that he went to, his grades were above the average of the incoming freshmen. His SAT score was way above the average. They gave him the highest level presidential scholarship thing that they offer in the school. And then he ended up getting chosen. He didn't even apply. I don't even know how it happened, but he got chosen for a scholarship because of his grades as a freshman in college. And so he was awarded that scholarship in the summer, between freshman and sophomore year. So he kind of, I would say, ended up aiming lower than what his performance in high school would have allowed him to do, but because right. the volleyball was the factor, you know, it limited his choices, but it ended up resulting in a good outcome for us financially anyway.
Right. So that, I mean, that's interesting you brought that up. So that's a, something that parents need to think about. As far as colleges are the biggest provider of scholarships, and yes. they tend to provide scholarships to yes. kids that are above average for them.
Mm-hmm.
So if you take a student that's a really strong student and can compete at the highest level of colleges, but just barely get in, well, then they're perhaps not scholarship material at those schools. They're average at those schools.
Right.
So if they go down a tier or two, now they're above average.
Mm-hmm.
So there's that balance of, well, if I try and get into the quote unquote best school I can, which we can argue about all day long, what best really means, but by definition, I'm going to be an average or even a below average student there because I just barely squeaked in. And because of that, now I'm not scholarship material as much as I would have been had I gone to, you know, a lesser school, but that's not a fair way of saying it because there's a lot of good schools at different levels.
Yeah, less competitive, maybe.
The whole, you know, prestige U.S. News and World Report rankings and that kind of stuff is, in my opinion, you know, again, colleges love it because of the marketing and the leverage they get because of it,
mm-hmm.
especially if they're top of the list. But the reality is for most kids, it's going to be what they do when they're there is going to have a much bigger difference on where they than where they go.
Absolutely. And I can say my experience observing my son in school, I am so happy he picked the school that he did. I mm-hmm. like the school. He likes the school. He has friends there. I love his volleyball coach. He's terrific. And he's just thriving. He is absolutely thriving there. And he FaceTimed me a couple of weeks ago. And sometimes he calls or texts or FaceTimes. It's a different thing every time. But mm-hmm. this particular time he FaceTimes me and he had a suit on. But I think he wanted me to see the suit. So as soon as I saw him, I said, "Whoa, what are you so dressed up for?" And he was very proud to tell me that he just did a job fair, like a virtual job fair. And mm-hmm. he had a couple of, you know, like preliminary interviews for internships. And I thought, that is so exciting. And I just thought, this is really, really, really neat. You know, he was never a kid who wanted to aim for pie in the sky, Ivy League or anything. He just doesn't have those kinds of aspirations. But to watch him at this school where he's doing well and he's happy and he's thriving and he's starting to make, you know, take steps to help him post-graduation, it's mm-hmm. just wonderful. I'm so thankful. And so my experience watching him go through it is that your child, if they really want to aim for the highest, most competitive school they can get into, go for it. But that is not necessarily the only answer or the best answer even.
Right. For sure. And, you know, there's different types of schools out there. So when I'm working with families, you know, that's one of the things I help you understand, right? There's the high end private schools, right? So the Ivy League and the wannabe Ivies and, you know, and John Hopkins and Stanford and University of Chicago and Northwestern. And again, most people know those names because they're, you know, they're the ones that everybody's chasing.
Mm-hmm.
They used to be called highly selective. Now some people are kind of making a joke of it and calling them highly rejective.
That's funny. I've not heard that.
Because in the end, to be selective, when you only take 10% of your applicants, if you think about what their marketing department is trying to do, is mm-hmm. they're trying to get applicants of, and 90% of the applicants are going to be rejected, mm-hmm. but they have to get enough rejections so that they can claim to be selective.
It's true. You
know, so they are literally pushing people to apply when they know potentially that they're not necessarily going to have a shot, but they need to have somebody to reject as well as accept.
Mm-hmm.
So it's kind of a strange concept as you start thinking about it.
Mm-hmm.
But, and again, those are some good schools. I'm not saying you shouldn't go to them or whatever it is, but there's alternatives to them as well. But one good thing about them is a lot of them are very generous on the need-based side, where if you show a need, they will fill it. The challenge is getting accepted. So once you can get in, a lot of times the money will fall in place for the low-income families. Now, if you're mid to high income, the challenge is they don't offer a lot of merit aid. So, mm-hmm. and they're very expensive. So I've seen families struggle with, you know, I can get into Northwestern, but they're $82,000 a year and they feel that we can afford $82,000 a year. So that's what we're going to have to pay because they don't mm-hmm. offer any sort of merit aid. But but my student also applied to quote unquote lesser university over here. And he won a $25,000 scholarship or a $40,000 scholarship. So now we're trying to decide, is it worth 80 for that name brand school, or is 35 in this school more appropriate?
And absolutely.
You know, then I start talking about, well, what does the money mean to you? It's one thing if you're saying I'm going to give up the lake home to pay for college or give up the Mercedes to pay for college. It's another to say I'm going to give up retirement to pay for college.
That's a big trade-off.
Exactly. So I think, you know, and again, if you can afford to spend the money and it's where you feel spending money is important, well, by all means, right? I'm not here to judge where you spend your extra money. But like I said, I see families that just bury themselves in debt, or they, and, you know, or spend retirement funds or that type of thing. And that is not a good plan. And I think most people, you know, in the light of day are fine with that. They say, you're right, that's probably not a good plan. But when it's crunch time and they're, you know, again, they're having to make a decision relatively quickly and the pressure's on, and it's hard to say no. It is really hard to say, have a kid that worked hard enough to put up the grades and everything else to accept it at these prestigious schools, and then to turn around and say, we can't do it because we can't afford it. Is a tough place to be. And, you know, that's part of my coaching when I'm working with parents of sophomores and juniors, is if you got to have that conversation early on and say, we can apply anywhere, but just because we get accepted doesn't mean we're going. The other piece of it has to be the financial piece. And if you, you know, again, I work with families a lot on predicting what types of colleges will be a reasonable price. Whether, again, when we talk about the types of colleges, you've got the elite, but you also have other privates, again, privates that want you, who may offer you merit or need-based aid or both. And then there's the privates that will just take you, as we mentioned earlier. There's many schools out there that don't promise to meet your need and can't meet your need. Sometimes they might be generous, but if you need more than they have to give, then they're going to essentially what we'd say is gap you. So, but there are a number of private schools out there where they, the below average student, their business model is the below average student pays an above average price. That's kind of their role in all of this. So again, you've got the parents that are doing reasonably well that, you know, and they're saying, well, I'm willing to pay in order to get to that name, you know, whatever that is, right? It's like my student's a little below average for this school, but if we pay 50 or 60 or 70,000, they'll let my student in. So, and I've got the money, so I'm going to spend it to get to that higher name. Whether it's worth it or not, again, I don't think it is. I wouldn't do it, but I'm not saying it's wrong. It's just you need to understand that there might be lower options available. Exactly.
My neighbor, his daughter, their daughter, I think she went to college maybe around 15 years ago. And I remember when she was applying to schools when she was in high school. And she's a super hard worker, super, super academic young lady. And she, I don't know all the schools she applied to, but she applied to the University of Pennsylvania and the University of Pittsburgh. I know those two schools anyway. And as I was checking in with her dad saying, oh, how's it going? How's the application process? Did she hear back from anybody? She ended up getting accepted to both schools.
Right. So it makes her a very strong student.
University of Pennsylvania gave her $0 in aid. University of Pittsburgh gave her a full scholarship. And she was torn because she desperately wanted to go to the University of Pennsylvania. And her dad was saying, are you kidding me? You could go to the University of Pittsburgh for free. Why would you not do that?
Right.
And so she ultimately thought through her options and what that would mean on the back end, because she wanted to be a doctor. So obviously med school is on the heels of college. And so she ended up going to the University of Pittsburgh for free for 4 years. And then she went on to med school And that cost $80,000 a year. So in the end, it was very good that she chose the school that she had the full scholarship to, even though it didn't have quite the name recognition that Penn did. But if she had gotten out with all those loans for med school and undergrad, goodness gracious, she'd be paying for the rest of her life.
Right. Well, and that's also another important point to realize is she could not have borrowed all that money.
Mm.
She would have had to have mom and dad either co-sign loans.
Right.
Or literally borrow the money and pay the bills. Right. So
right.
When we get to the loan side of things, again, you don't need to understand the loans in great detail as you're rolling in, other than to understand that most students can only borrow $5,500 as a freshman.
Oh, I didn't even know that.
Any more borrowing than that, the parents are either taking the other federal loan, which is called the PLUS loan. So we've got the direct loan, mm-hmm. which is $5,500 for the student. Then we have the PLUS loan, which is cost of attendance minus any other aid. So again, you could borrow all $80,000 to go to UPenn. But it's mom or dad borrowing that $80,000, not wow. the student.
Interesting.
Now, and then we've got private loans. So now some people are saying, well, I don't want to borrow the money for college. I want my kid to borrow. Well, again, they have no credit history. They've got no collateral, et cetera, so they can't borrow. So now mom and dad could co-sign a loan at a private type of loan where the primary borrower is the student and they're co-signing. But all the underwriting and all the, you know, where they determine what the interest rate is going to be and all that kind of stuff is based on the parents, because again, the student doesn't have anything to base it on. So they look at the parents to figure out if they can afford to pay it back. They look at the parents to figure out what interest rate it should be based on their credit scores and that kind of thing in the private market. The PLUS loan from the government, the parents can borrow, and as long as, and again, they can get themselves in over their head very easily because they don't do a check on whether or not the student or whether or not the parent can afford to pay it back. They just verify that the parent doesn't have a lot of major black marks.
Mm-hmm.
So if you have bankruptcies or 90 day lates on your credit, then maybe you'll be denied for the PLUS loan. But again, I've seen families earning very low amounts of money borrow hundreds of thousands of dollars on the PLUS loan. And then realize that there's no easy way that they're ever going to pay it back. So hopefully the student did well and is going to help mom and dad and bail out mom and dad because they're in over their head. I don't recommend that, obviously, but it happens pretty regularly.
Mm-hmm.
So the whole idea that, you know, students are graduating with hundreds of thousands of dollars of debt, not undergrad, again, unless mom and dad are co-signing. So that means there is an adult in the room. So this whole idea that, you know, these students were taken advantage of, well, yes, they were. But again, mom and dad were co-signing. Or another popular thing now is grad school. So grad school now, there are a lot of loans available for grad school, generally not as many scholarships. And theoretically, you're going to have a strong income. So a lot of companies are willing to take the risk on a grad level loan and hope that you will, in fact, have strong enough earnings to pay it back. So the MDs and dentists and physician assistants and all those types of programs, you know, and because of that, the colleges have raised the prices on that stuff. And that's another profit source now. And there's been recently in the Wall Street Journal or Times, I can't remember where now exactly, but there's a number of colleges out there that are doing online masters and, mm-hmm. you know, masters in sociology and a lot of master's degrees where the earning potential isn't there, yet they're still charging, you know, $100,000 or $200,000 for 2 or 3 years of grad school. And then the kids are graduating and starting at $50,000 and realizing that $1,000 a month or $1,500 a month in loan payments is half their income.
Mm.
And it's not, you know, and what's left is hard to live on.
Mm-hmm.
But again, so you need to know what you're getting into before you get into it instead of after, but that's always been the case.
I think another viable option for families and for kids is community colleges. because they're very affordable, and some of them are even now free, which is a great option for at least the first 2 years.
Yeah. I would agree. The challenge there is most parents are looking for the college experience. Mm-hmm. At least the parents that I work with, or it's the parents that value education, are looking for the college experience, not just an education.
I actually knew a young man who, and I agree with you there. I know a young man who decided on his own. How unusual is this? He decided on his own to stay at home and go to community college for the first 2 years and then transfer to a 4-year school in year three, junior year, because he knew as a high school senior that he's a very sociable, extroverted person. And he knew that if he went away to school, he would not thrive academically. He would have way too much fun socially and his grades would not be good. So he chose to keep himself at home, working part-time, going to school, and give himself a little more time to mature before he left to school. And then junior year, he transferred to the 4-year university. He finished the last 2 years. He lived in an apartment there with some friends, and he graduated with very good grades. And I thought, wow, I've never heard of that before. Yeah, I know it's not unheard of, but what a great choice for him to make.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I think higher education, and I've been saying this for years, so I don't know when it's going to happen, but COVID, I think, is accelerating it. But there's going to be some changes in higher education. Again, because, right, I mean, what is the goal of higher education? Is it training for a job? Is it, you know, a safe place to grow up a little and learn about life? Is it study what your passion is? And, you know, and there's so many different things that different people apply, you know, that college is for them. But especially in like the adult, you know, the returning adult community, the online school, the various ways that you can get a degree, there's lots of choices and at different price points and that type of thing. But again, because, you know, a lot of times the returning student is a busy parent or already has a full-time job, they don't necessarily want the college experience. They want the education. So there's a difference, right? And the college education is getting more and more expensive. And again, if you think about why that is, it's like, well, they raised the prices and they still came. And so they raised the prices and they still came. And they raised the prices and they still came. Recently now, they've been raising their prices and they're not coming. So now they're upping the scholarships. So the top line price of most colleges continues to go up, but so does the scholarships behind the scene. So the net price of college is not going up as fast as it used to. They've kind of hit the saturation point. And what the saturation point essentially means is it's going to be painful for most families, right? I mean, they raised the prices until it was so painful that some families said, we just can't do it. And then they backed off just a little bit, right? And they tried to find the line of, well, what is the market willing to pay? And then, of course, you know, shopping for college is kind of like shopping for another big purchase, say a car. Okay. But there's a couple of differences. Can you imagine shopping for a car, but before you talk to the dealership, you give them a full financial, you fill out a form that's got all your financial information on it. This is what you earn and this is what you have saved for a car. And then he's going to determine what the car is going to cost.
It is a little backwards, isn't it?
It is, right? And think of if they had crazy high prices, right? Well, this car is $100,000. But if you're depending on fill out your forms at, maybe it's only $30,000 or $40,000. But if it looks like you can afford to pay, it probably will be $100,000. So it's a kind of a strange market.
And there's no guarantee that car is going to get you around 4 years later when you graduate.
Exactly. Right. So then you need to be comparing and making sure you're getting the right car, or should it be a truck or a van or that whole process of, well, you got to go kick the tires and drive the cars and do that kind of stuff. And I think in the other concern that many parents have is what you don't want to have happen is you buy the car that's a good fit and then discover that across the street, the same car or essentially the same car was half the price.
Mm-hmm.
You know, well, mine has heated seats. Well, that one did too. Well, mine, you know, does this. Well, that one did too. It's like, oh, well, then why did we pick this one? Well, because we didn't know what the fair price across the street was. We saw the sticker price, but we never saw the, you know, so that's the challenge is really, so the process of shopping for a college means you've got to spend some time either on the front end or the back end figuring out what it's going to cost.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, as I'm working with families, we can, it's much, you know, with, there's some tools out there now where we literally can figure out what the real price is going to be, or at least a range of what the real price is going to be even before you apply. You know, as I mentioned, we've got the high end schools, where we know we're not going to get merit aid, but we can figure out what need-based aid is going to be look like.
Mm-hmm.
We've got the local state school. And again, your local state school is going to probably be the price to beat for most families.
Mm-hmm.
So whatever you're, you know, getting high state, high, you meant, I think you implied you're in Pennsylvania.
Oh, we're in New Jersey.
Oh, New Jersey. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So New Jersey and Pennsylvania, I think are both high price states, as is Illinois, relatively speaking, where their state schools are kind of pricey.
Mm-hmm.
Compared to other school, other places, you mm-hmm. know, Iowa and Wyoming and, you know, there's lots of places where it's really low cost and many places where it's kind of in between. But that often is the price to beat. A typical college is going to say, well, I know you can go to the local state school for $25,000 and we're not going to get many people to sign on at $50,000.
Mm-hmm.
But if we can get our price to $30,000, then maybe we could,
mm-hmm.
Or 35 or 25 or whatever it might be. So, mm-hmm. you know, a lot of colleges now are really doing what's called enrollment management, which is how much of a discount do we have to give you to get you to come and hopefully not a penny more.
Mm-hmm.
So that's new in the college industry where they will give you, again, they're not trying to give you more than they have to get you to come. So if you would come at $40,000, that's what they want to offer you.
Mm-hmm.
They don't want to have, you know, they want to bring the price down to 30 if you would have paid 40.
Mm-hmm.
And they're now trying to figure out how to do that.
But I think all of that happens after the application has been made, after the acceptances are in, and then you're starting to figure out with the schools right. where that comes in, right? That's that part of the process.
Right. Exactly. So let's talk a little bit about that timeline, because I think it confuses a lot of people.
Yes.
So it's easiest to talk about the senior timeline because that timeline is set by the colleges. So you actually have deadlines.
Yes.
So you, you know, applications are due sometime in the fall, typically. So my general rule of thumb, all your applications are in by Thanksgiving. If you're doing early decision, early action, a lot of times it's going to be
earlier,
as soon as September,
yeah.
where you're working hard and submitting. So which means you might actually, you know, some of the students might actually be working on essays through the summer and that kind mm-hmm. of thing. Financial aid, generally they turn on the applications October 1st and you want to get them done probably in October. There's not a real good reason to delay beyond that.
Mm-hmm.
All the taxes are done and available. I mean, all the data's there. You just got to do it.
Mm-hmm.
So there's not a good reason to delay that either. So that's in the fall. Then you start getting information on acceptances through the winter. Some colleges will send you that teaser scholarship. Again, if you applied to that high price school, that's $65,000 and you qualify for a scholarship, they might send a teaser letter that says, congratulations, you got $20,000 off per year. Again, why? Well, they want you to keep going because some students apply to that school, didn't tell mom and dad, hey, I got accepted at X school. Isn't that great? And they're like, not really. I just looked it up. It's $70,000 a year. Then you get a letter that says, oh, here's $20,000 off so far. And we might give you more. Oh, well, let's keep going then because they're going to mm-hmm. give us some scholarships. So that top line price isn't the real price.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why they do it in December or January to keep you interested in the school.
Mm-hmm.
Later on, they'll send you the formal offer, which has all the scholarships and loans and federal aid and state aid and all the different aid buckets that they can tap on your behalf. And then that's usually around March and April. And then May 1st, you pick the school you want to go to and send in your deposits. So that timeline's very structured and pretty clear.
Mm-hmm.
Now the junior year, I think, is the challenge, and there are no deadlines per se, other than do what you need to do to be ready for the senior year. And most mm-hmm. people don't realize that there's lots you can do and should do and probably should start early in the junior year or even sophomore year for many families. Because there's the testing, right? You need to take tests and ACT or SAT. And again, it might be once and done. My son took it 4 times. He took a practice and then 3 real tests over the course of 10 months, probably. Some people just take it once and they're done. And that, and again, with test optional, as you mentioned earlier, maybe you don't do it at all. But if you're going to do it and it's going to take 10 months, you really don't want to be doing it the senior year, which means some kids need to start early in their junior year. School visits and school research. Most kids don't really know what college means other than what people have told them or what they've seen on whatever show they watch with the, you know, the that's set at a college. There's a number of college set, you know, TV shows and stuff that depict college. You know, back in our day, it was Animal House that set what college was about. Now it's
yes.
just as fictitious, but not quite as crazy. But, you know, so getting out and doing some visits early on, you know, is another strong recommendation I often will tell people is go to a couple of local schools just to give them a frame of reference. They've never, you know, and again, they say, well, they go on the campus all the time because they play volleyball and they have tournaments at this particular college. So they've seen it. It's like, no, they haven't. They've seen a gymnasium.
Right. It's different.
Right? It's when you go see the tour, they talk about the majors and you get to talk to a tour guide and ask him what major he is and what he likes about the school. And they walk out, walk around and show you where you're going to eat and where you're going to sleep. And
that is so valuable.
It's so different than, oh, I've been on the campus. And you can, again, start early to help, you know, again, sometimes, you know, I've had parents tell me we drove 4 hours and they wouldn't get out of the car. We drove onto the campus. They said, I don't like it. I'm not here. We're done. Let's go home. I was so mad. And it's like, oh, well, at least now, you know, what is it about that school they didn't like? So you can avoid that in the future. Right. Cause that's part of the process is this is what I like. This is what I absolutely have to have. And this is what I hate and can't have, you know? So some of those would be things like students will say like, well, it's gotta be bigger than my high school. Right. My high school was
that's a frame of reference.
3,000 students, and I go to this little school, it's smaller than my high school. It just doesn't feel right. It doesn't feel like college to me. Is that scientific? No, it's just their feeling. But if you need a large school, you need a large school.
Right.
Or does it have the majors, or is it near or far? Again, you drive 6 hours and all of a sudden they realize how far away that is. And that visit might they might then decide to stay closer to home. Or conversely, they might love that idea. Who knows?
Right.
Urban and rural is another big one, right?
That's
some
a big one.
Some colleges are out in the sticks, so to speak. Some colleges are kind of suburban, near a city, but not really in the city. And then, of course, some are right downtown.
Yes.
Some, you know, some families find some more, some of that more or less important, whether it is, you know, again, kids that are used to having green spaces have a hard time. That was me when I went to college, right? I was used to having green spaces and I looked at a school that was right downtown and they had 1/4 of 1 city block with 2 trees on it. And that was it. As far as green spaces, everything else was sidewalks and concrete and 4 and 5 and 6 story buildings. And it's like, oh, this just doesn't, you know, and I look back on it and say, well, that was me then. Now it would have been fine. But then coming from a small town, relatively rural, it was a shock. I just couldn't see myself there. Others, it's, I really want to be downtown. I grew up in a big city or a suburb and I want to be near a big city or suburb when I'm in college. But getting those visits, you know, visits are important and a lot of people don't, you know, if you look at how many people search for scholarships compared to how many people search for visits, you know, and the internet, everybody's thinking about scholarships. Nobody's thinking about visits. And I think that's a mistake. It's a key piece of the puzzle. And it doesn't have to be. You can start with the virtual visits. That's something that COVID brought us in spades, is all the colleges ramped up their virtual everything. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So now you can, you know, before you make take that 6-hour drive, you can sit and spend a half hour, an hour doing some virtual visits. Mm-hmm. So that, again, so you're not in that situation where they won't even get out of the car. Mm-hmm. Hopefully, but with virtual visits, you'll quickly eliminate that school and save the trip altogether. But I think virtual visits is another important piece of it. You can also use visits to learn about what do I want to be when I grow up.
Mm-hmm.
There's a school in my town here in Milwaukee that they do a lot of healthcare related events, usually on a weekend, because they offer a lot of healthcare majors. So they've got PA and PT and dentistry and nursing and a number of others, and they have a little fair. So if your student is saying, I think I want to be a physical therapist or a PA, but I don't really understand what the difference is or what the schooling is about or whatever, again, a lot of students would say, I'm not going to the college that's in my town, no matter what. And that's fine, but you can go to that college and learn about what college is like. You're not committing to going there. You're just going there to learn about what college is like, or learn about a major you're interested in, or whatever it might be. And then it's convenient for everybody. I mean, you could learn about PT 6 hours away, or you could learn about PT right in your backyard.
Mm-hmm.
PT is the same either place. And then do those longer visits for the schools you're interested in. And again, a lot of times it's convenient on a weekend. So I encourage parents, especially if you've got a junior, and by the time this is airing, we're well into the junior year. If you haven't done school visits, you need to do them now.
Mm-hmm.
Which means go to a couple local schools and look at their visit pages and pick one and go do it, because it'll be relatively convenient. And you can do it on a Saturday morning or a Tuesday morning, or just get started. Because the first visit is always the one where you're just learning how to visit. And
right.
Another caution, right? I have families that will do a visit if their first visit is 6 hours away, and then they do 4 more visits, and then they say, the school we went to first, when we were just learning how to visit, we didn't ask the right questions. We didn't get the right information. Now we have to go back 6 hours away. Well, again, another great reason to do the local schools first, right? Is get some practice in, learn how to visit. If the schools are truly on your list and you feel like you didn't do a good job, you can go back, and it's not a big a deal. And if you're going to fly, again, a lot of families will do that road trip during spring break, where we're interested in the East Coast or the West Coast or whatever it might be. We're going to go visit 4 schools in 5 days during spring break. Like, okay, well, hopefully it's not your first 5 visits. Go do a couple local practice visits 3 or 4 weeks ahead of time. Start writing down some of the questions and, what is it that you're looking for in a school? And so you ask that question, do you offer study abroad? Because I realized in my first visit or second visit that study abroad is an interesting concept.
Mm-hmm.
So now I should ask that question everywhere. If they don't bring it up in the presentation, I'll just ask the question just to see. And, study abroad is available just about everywhere now. It was used to be a big differentiator. It's not as much anymore, but the quality of it might be.
Mm-hmm.
So that's, again, kind of the process around visits that, and again, you've been there. What have you seen when you're out and about, where it gets repetitive? After a while, it's like, okay, I've seen this same basic financial aid presentation 4 times and I don't learn anything anymore.
Right.
Okay. Well, then stop going. Find something else to do. Go to the local eatery or walk up to a couple of random students and ask them what they think of this college, or what they like about it, or what they don't like. Or again, that's kind of advanced visits, right? You do the basics, you do exactly what they say, how they say it. As you get more experience, you realize that maybe I should call ahead and schedule an appointment with the volleyball coach.
Mm-hmm.
That's what's important to me.
Mm-hmm.
And I can skip the financial aid presentation because I've seen it 6 times and it's all the same. Again, once you're at that level,
Right.
But the first visit or two is just get your feet wet. Mm-hmm. Sophomore year, early junior year, ideally. And of course, the maturity of the student is a big challenge there. Of some students just aren't ready sophomore year,
that's
early
what,
junior year.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. I tried to start gently bringing this topic up to my daughter when she was a sophomore. She's a junior now. And she was just kind of like, whoa, I am not even finished my second year of high school and you want to talk about college? I'm not ready. And so, mm-hmm. you know, I backed off and then we started gently talking about it again in the summertime. And then by the end of August, we went on our first college tour. But interestingly enough, so I had been on a few with my son. So I worked out the kinks of that. You don't know what you don't know until you get there. But we did, because he went pre-pandemic, so it was a different world back then. Our first visit with my daughter was a self-guided visit. So not virtual where you do it on the computer. We drove to the school, which was a close one, mm-hmm. but it was an app you put on your phone and you just listen through the headphones and they, you know, you follow the map and you go to this building and that one and the other one. And I thought that would be really good and useful and convenient because you can do it whenever it fits instead of having to show up at 10 a.m. or something like that. But
right.
She could not stand it. Number one, no one was on campus because the campus hadn't really opened yet.
Yes.
And so it was about a week before kids were arriving for the fall semester. And she said, it's so deserted. There's no one here. This is terrible. I don't like it. And then so she immediately got a negative feeling about it because of the time of year that we went. But also mm-hmm. we were able to nix that because the campus was so big and it had multiple campuses and your classes could be anywhere. You'd have to get mm-hmm. Wait at the bus stop and get on a bus to go to the other campus and come back. And I know she's not going to like that. So it was easy for us to nix that for that reason as well. But I think, I've heard that from a lot of people, a lot of parents and kids say that if you go on a visit when no one is on campus, it's a different experience than when you're there and the kids have their book bags and they're walking to and from classes and you can see what it feels like when it's actually alive and well.
Absolutely. Right. So that, what does that mean? Well, that means visits happen while college is in session. And
high
a lot of times summers aren't a great time. So right. when college is only in, and again, that's relatively short windows, right? You've got mid-September through Thanksgiving, and then usually between Thanksgiving and Christmas, it's already starting to shut down and hard. And a lot of times there's not much available. Mm-hmm. And then you've got mid-January through March, April. Mm-hmm. May is starting to get questionable. And then summer visits. So some families will say to me that, well, we're just going to go visit in the summer. And it's like, well, visiting the summer is better than not visiting at all, but visiting during the spring and fall is probably better than the summer.
Right.
And, you know, some of the challenges around, you know, well, why did you like that school? Well, I liked that school because the tour guide was cute. Oh, wait a minute. I don't think that's a good reason, you know, or I like that school because the sun was shining and it was a beautiful day and the other school,
which can influence it.
Absolutely. I mean, we visited, you know, where my son ended up when we visited that school, it was literally snowing 20 to 30 mile an hour winds.
Wow.
The whole time we were outside.
Wow.
And this storm was for about 4 hours.
Wow.
Which was the 4 hours of the morning that we were there. It cleared up when the sun came out when we were driving home.
Wow.
So it was just miserable. And we, you know, I had to talk with him a lot about, you know, you have to discount this snowstorm because that can happen anywhere.
Mm-hmm.
Don't let that. And it was during COVID and it was, you know, it was pretty scarce and lots of problems, but as well. But yes, weather and the luck of the draw, the tour guide you get and et cetera, can have a big influence. You know, the mood that you are when you get there, if there's a contentious argument in the car before you got there,
mm-hmm.
all that can have a big impact on, you know, what you feel about that particular college. And you got to try and separate that from, the actual college itself. And it can be challenging as well.
Yes, it certainly can.
I guess another important area to kind of talk about is the financial side of things. So, I mean, there's things that parents do, there's things that the students do, and there's things you do together. So visits and school research and to some extent testing is something you do together. Now, test prep and actually writing the test, hopefully, is the student, not the parent. That would be highly unethical.
Right.
But it has happened, unfortunately.
Oh, yes.
So they got to figure out what they want to be when they grow up. They got to choose their major. They've got to do the applications for college.
Mm-hmm.
Again, ideally, maybe with some of your help or some coaching or whatever from you or outsiders or whatever it is.
Mm-hmm.
And then the together part, as I mentioned, is planning the testing schedule, doing the visits, doing the school research. But then on the parents by themselves now, which you can do anytime, whether your student's ready or not, is will we qualify for need-based aid?
Mm-hmm.
You know, are we on track for merit aid? What's our budget? How are we going to be fair if we've got multiple kids? And then do we have extra complications? Things like blended families and divorce make it more complicated. It's going to take
more time. Mm-hmm.
Having multiple kids in school at the same time changes the numbers. So you need to understand that. If you're a business owner and you've got fluctuating income or other challenges around that, there's also opportunities because you can maybe can set your income lower than what you would if you're not the business owner. Right? Mm-hmm. If you're a salaried employee, well, your income is your income. Mm-hmm. If you're the business owner, it's like you set your own salary potentially, and you could set it higher or lower depending on what you need for the college experience. So there's, will I qualify for need-based aid? The higher level question is, are there things I can do to get more aid? Often the answer is yes, once you understand the system. Will we qualify for merit aid? In other words, do I have that top-end student? And do I want to target schools where I could be that presidential scholar? Or am I okay squeaking into a school and paying full price? So there's lots the parent can do without necessarily the student being ready. And most of the time you're going to do with this all kind of in parallel. We visited some schools, so now we know we're interested in both public and private, or high end and not, or expensive and low cost, or only high end and high cost, or, the schools we're looking at offer lots of need-based aid. Schools we're looking at offer lots of merit aid, or they don't offer any merit aid, or so this is, these schools are likely to cost X and Y. Those schools have a different price. How are we going to make it all come together? It's not a front to back type planning process. It's a little bit circular, right? You visit some schools, you decide what you like, you go look at the prices and do some research and realize maybe that's not a good fit financially. So then you go visit some different schools and you kind of bounce back and forth. My test scores are this, but I like that school and my test score is not good enough for that school. Am I going to work on the test score? Am I going to work on finding a school like this that isn't as competitive? So it's a process that, again, as I was telling you before we started, I've never had a family tell me we started too early. Not once. Mm-hmm. I've had hundreds of times I've heard from families, oh, we probably should have done this sooner, or
mm-hmm.
I feel like we're behind now. And I think that's, because most families with high school students are crazy busy with everything that's going on from sports to everything else, that squeezing in college is a challenge. But I think it needs to be done.
I think you said the most important word probably just a minute ago. It's a process. And I think, yes. I think that's a concept that we can leave parents with today, that The college process is a process and it takes a very long time. It's not something that you can just start in October of their senior year. It's something that you should at least have on your mind if your child wants to go to college. You should at least have it in your mind at the very least once they get to high school, if not before. Before they get to high school, it's just about, you know, having the concept of saving money, I think, for college and teaching your kids good values about education, why education is a good thing, and you know, how we work hard to earn and achieve what we want and accomplish the things that we want to achieve or accomplish. Mm-hmm. Those are like just life lessons that we can be working on just in the background as a part of our daily lives. But once our kids get to high school, I think it's important just to kind of have that just kind of sitting in our minds. College is around the corner. If our child wants to go, we probably should learn a reasonable timeline so that mm-hmm. we can be well prepared. Our child can be well prepared. If you didn't learn a reasonable timeline and it's kind of late, it's going to add some stress. There's no way around that. The college mm-hmm. process is stressful anyway, but you can reduce the stress by getting a reasonable timeline mapped out when your child gets to college or gets to high school so that you can kind of just do this in dribs and drabs, little conversations here and there. You know, mm-hmm. maybe on your way home from a trip or something, you might think, oh, why don't we stop by, drive through this campus since we're near it, and you can just take a look around. Maybe when they're a freshman or a sophomore, they probably aren't even thinking about college because it might as well be a million years from now when they're mm-hmm. that age. But you can just start kind of planting the seeds and get them thinking about it. And then, like you were saying, with maybe some more things in sophomore year, certainly more in junior year, and certainly more in senior year. But I think keeping in mind that it is a process, it takes a long time to figure this stuff out. Our kids have to figure out they have to make a lot of choices. What kind of right. school do they want to go to? Do they stay far or close? Do they want a big school, a small school, city, mountain, rural, ocean? You know, where do they want to go? What do they want to do with the rest of their lives? So many decisions to make, not easy ones to make. And I think the other thing that I try to remind parents and teenagers, it's not like you're ever signing your name in blood. So if you pick something that seems right, go with it. And if you get there and you're not happy, you can always change to another school. Nothing right. is ever set in stone. Don't feel so much pressure to make absolutely the right choice the first time. Do the best you can with the information and the resources you have. If you need to switch it around, you certainly can. I think there's a lot of stress involved, and we can reduce the stress by being well prepared, learning the time frames, and remember that it's not set in stone. You can always right. fix it later.
For sure. And now, and there's a new burgeoning industry out there that helps students, you know, one of their biggest benefits is they're not mom and dad, right? Mm. So the student can have those frank conversations with somebody else that isn't mom and dad, and it just goes easier.
That can be so helpful.
Right. Just to figure out what they want to be. They grow, you know, at various price points and various complexities, mm-hmm. all the way from, you know, tens of thousands of dollars to a couple of quick hours of have this discussion or do this you know. But I think most family, you know, and then like me on the financial side too, is most families don't know we exist. So they don't know, and they don't know who to look for, and they don't know the help is out there. So they don't even try. Mm-hmm. You know, they just assume college's process is going to be like when they did it, where parents and students figured it out and did the best they could. Like everything else, right? You've got, if you want to be a really good volleyball player, there's coaches and camps and all kinds of help. Mm-hmm. Well, there's similar help now in academics and choosing colleges. And, you know, I almost never meet the students I'm planning for. I mean, maybe 20 or 30% of the students. So I'm not the guy that's going to help write essays or test prep or figure out what you want to be when you grow up, but they're out there. And, you know, if you've been involved in sales and you've done the Colby interest inventory or some of those other tools, again, it's not foolproof, but it can advance the ball as well, where all kinds of help out there, from reading a book to, you know, hiring a high price consultant and everything in between.
Yes. I've had a couple of those college counselor coach people on the podcast as well. So if you're listening to this and you want to check them out, they are on previous episodes. So I think we could talk about this probably for hours and hours, because it's, yes, there's so many layers and so many angles to be prepared for, but we'll have to come back together and do a part two to discuss this college process. In the meantime, though, where can people connect with you if they would like to get some of your advice or support and guidance?
Right. So everything's available at my website, tamingthehighcostofcollege.com. So we've got the podcast there. I've got Scholarship Guide for Busy Parents, which is covers the three different types of scholarships, which, again, most parents don't understand that there's three types. You know, so you, at a minimum, you understand the types and figure out which ones will work for you. We've got Cost of Colleges by State. So we've got some resources where you can get some preliminary pricing based on your income, not just sticker price, but net price. A number of resources there. And then if you want to contact me directly there, you know, through the website, there's a phone number there you can call. There's a certainly contact us or send us an email or however you want to get in contact.
Well, super. I am definitely going to check out your resources on your website, because I don't even know what the three kinds of scholarships are. So clearly I need to educate myself, since I already have a kid in college.
Yes.
Well, thank you so much, Brad, for this time today. I think that you are a treasure trove of knowledge and resources and information for parents, and I'm really glad that we had this conversation today.
Yes, thank you for having me.
And we will come together again for a part two.
Sounds good.
All right, that wraps up today's episode. Wherever you are in this world, I hope you make it a very informative day for yourself. That wraps up this episode of Powerful Parenting for Today's Kids. If you know anyone who could benefit from this episode or this podcast in general, please share it with them. Also, I always love hearing feedback from my listeners. I welcome you to send me an email to erin@erin-taylor.com if you have any comments or questions that come up for you in an episode. Our children are our future. Parenting them is the most sacred task we will ever be asked to do. It truly does take a village to raise a child. Let's help each other to raise our children to be who it is they are meant to be. If at any point you feel like you need a little extra help and support, reach out to me. I am here to help you.